Howdy, folks. This is Ted Lasso, your favorite optimistic American football coach turned English football coach. And welcome to The Richmond Way, a Ted Lasso Rewatch podcast. So grab your biscuits, put on your AFC Richmond scarf, and let's embark on this journey together.
Hello, welcome to The Richmond Way. Our second episode, even though it's 001. Third episode if you count the bonus episode, but we don't do numbers here.
We don't do math here.
No, math is math.
Or maths.
We're talking about a show about football. It's supposed to be low scoring, 0-0 ties, right?
Why do they play it then?
For the love of the game.
Well, if you go by what Beard said, why it was created.
So these Victorian era headmasters, all they wanted to do was get the boys to stop masturbating. So They invented a sport where the boys wouldn't use their hands at all. And they thought that might do the trick.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah. Let's move past that mic in.
Part of the show.
Yeah.
It is part of the show.
Yeah.
But we're talking about the pilot episode here of Ted Lasso, where we get to meet Mr. Jason Sudeikis playing the now infamous Ted Lasso, the highly positive fish out of water, over and across the pond, if you will. So the premise of the show with an American football coach is hired to be an English Premier League football coach, and then comedy ensues.
It's pretty much.
But it's a lot deeper than that, right?
We get way more than that with this show.
Yeah, so here we are. We're talking about the first episode. It's a rewatch, if you will. We've all seen it. So those who haven't seen it, there may be some spoilers you're going to be upset by. If you're listening, we'll try to announce that. If you're watching, we'll try to put something on the screen.
Yes. Yeah, although
we're going to do our best here.
Yeah, it'll be implied that if we're doing a rewatch, yes.
Personally, I think after a month, spoilers, you don't need a spoiler alert. Like,
yeah,
if you haven't seen it in a month.
Yeah, and there'll definitely be some sections that are like leaning towards the future there too.
But for the most part, any spoilers are going to come from us, not the synopsis of the show. Because the first episode, in my opinion, was the setup episode. You got the basic story, the basic characters. You got to meet the players, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
What say you, Mark? How do you feel about the pilot? What's your overall synopsis of it?
Well, after I rewatched it the other day, I sent you to a text, and I was like, "Hey guys, Ted Lasso was a good show. I think we should I think we should do a rewatch podcast about it because I've only watched the show one time through, unlike Mike, who's watched it like 80 times through at this point."
Mm-hmm.
So
I watched the first episode 3 times in preparation for this. So
nice, yeah. So
that
like,
brings me up to 7
make
times.
Us look total. Bad.
Yeah. I so try. That is for me like at least why watching it like now through again. It's kind of nice because it's like seeing it a little bit differently than the first time I watched it. Because like the first time I was watching, it was just like experiencing it for the first time. I hadn't fully fallen in love with the show yet. So like now watching it back. And then also having that kind of all that foreknowledge of where a lot of these characters will end up by the end of the third season, when someday in the future, when we eventually get to that finale, just kind of interesting seeing them again here back at the start and kind of knowing like what the journey that they'll go on over these next 3 seasons or so. So it was cool watching this episode in particular, just kind of seeing the beginning of that. And then because that finale is so still fresh in my mind, seeing a lot of what they reworked from this to kind of be like loop back around.
Full circle.
Finale. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then that's also why I wore this because, Ted's got it on the episode. So. And for people that are just listening, you'll have to guess what I just talked about that I was wearing.
Hint, it's not pants.
Yeah, that's true. It was 80 degrees today, so I wore shorts.
So. 80 degrees. It was 25 here. God damn.
And on that note of the West Coast, how about How about Bonnie?
It was also 80 degrees here too, and I am wearing shorts right now because it can get quite warm in this booth. I'm going to agree with the previous statements about the, you know, the stranger in a strange land, fish out of water story. It's, you know, I took a lot of notes. I took a lot of notes as I was
copious amounts of notes.
But
copious.
I think at the bottom, I'm going to scroll down. I put great pilot episode, and it is Exposition City. They have that. I'm going, oh, that's exposition. Oh, yeah. Oh, that is that. Yeah. Oh, I see what they're doing. So this is how it's homework, and this is how I write it off on my taxes. I'm like, look, I have notes. Nice. But I thought it was, I actually just saw the show. I've only seen it one time through, but I only saw it for the first time last year.
You gotta get a life.
Huh?
He said, I gotta get a life.
I only saw it for the first time a year ago when I was in Seattle at my friend Jen's, and she said, I'm going to make you watch this. And she was telling me to watch it for a long time. And I went, yeah, with what time? I'll do it. Well, when I was in her house, she said, okay, you're here. You're going to watch it. And I said, okay. So we put it on and I thought, okay, like that was really good. And I have a deeper appreciation for it now than I did a year ago, for sure. And I actually sat and watched it from, I can take notes and I know how this is going to tie into things later, but watching it from a different perspective this time around. So that's cool. It's going to be cool to rediscover it and try to be in the moment with the characters and not think too far ahead of where are they going to be and where's it going to end up, but enjoying the journey to get there. So I have a couple like, oh, this is what they're trying to say. This is what the message of it is, but we can get to that. But yeah, I thought it was a nice rewatch. It was a good, solid pilot episode.
Nice. I have a question for both of you guys really quick. Because since I showed you to the NBC Sports like origins of the character in the last episode we did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, rewatching this pilot, having watched that, was there stuff that you now recognized as similarities that were brought over from the origins of the character, that some of the jokes they brought into this?
Very much so.
I didn't pay attention to that as much.
I noticed it when we watched the NBC Sports things.
Yeah.
Him in the car pretending to be on the wrong side.
Oh, yeah.
The jokes about tea. All kinds of little things were in there. I mean, I'm glad they changed the character, like I said.
Yeah.
Last week, because it would not have been the same show if they did not.
Yeah, he was way better this time. They humanized him more versus a caricature, I would say, in the sketches. Because you're only getting 5 minutes to do something. You don't get a lot of character exploration. And this time you get 30, 45 minutes. You have more of that. You're able to do more and show more. But I would agree 100%. I'm glad they made him a lot more likable and a lot more human. And made a lot of the, what works with the comedy in it is that it's not that it's trying to be funny. And that's where a lot of people get comedy stuff wrong, is they're thinking, oh, I have to make a joke and I have to be funny. It's like, no, the truth is funny. Be funny in that moment. Be funny in the truth. And that's what makes it funny. And that's what makes it beautiful and heartbreaking and all these things that are the, I'm going to sound so pretentious, the human experience.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to...
Man, pretentious, copious. We're bringing out the thesaurus this week.
Yeah, we are.
But yeah, essentially, this episode served, as I mentioned, as a character setup for everyone. I felt Rebecca got the biggest setup, the most storytelling out of everyone.
Oh, yeah.
Ted being second on the list, even though it's a show called Ted Lasso. He didn't really get, you kind of knew who Ted was the moment you saw him.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Rebecca, they layered her throughout, gave her different layers in this episode.
Yeah.
I felt it was, and despite, in my opinion, despite her being the villain and despite what she's doing, kind of being petty and heinous and just overall a bad, I don't know if it's a bad idea, but just the pettiness of it should make you not like her because you're being stupid in a sense. You didn't get that. I did not feel 1 ounce of hatred for the villain character. I was I felt like this is an interesting way to get back at your husband, but I understand why, the hurt and all that. Mm-hmm. And, you've been driven to this point, And it's just, it was interesting that this is your chosen retribution.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like so mean where I'm like, I hate you. I'm done. I'm writing you off. You're like, you're not a villain. She didn't feel like a villain, I should say. She didn't have that villain. Like Rupert comes on later. Sorry, folks. He comes on later. And you're just immediately like, I hate you so much. Just when he walks in. You don't know who he is yet, but you hate him.
Yeah. They set it up really well for that. And I want to piggyback off of that and say the reason why, in my opinion, she doesn't come across as like being Cruella de Vil. Like she's not hurting puppies. She's trying to get back at her ex-husband. She was betrayed by him. And there's that element of you kind of almost want to say like, I don't agree with you, but go off, sis. Like, you know, like go sock it to him, you know, and maybe.
Go lemonade.
Yeah. Exactly. I put in here one of my notes, Rebecca is a fox. And then I also put something about like she's being mother right now. That's me trying to relate to the Gen Z folks. But yeah, you know, she's not in the best. She's not the best. I don't want to say character because that's not right. She's not acting with the best intentions, but you don't hate her for it. 100%. You go.
Right.
No, I get it.
Yeah, because she's supposed to be she comes off as the villain.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise there is no natural villain in this episode.
She's the source of the conflict, 100%.
Yeah, and like we'll come to see it in the next two seasons too. But like this first episode opens on, well, it technically opens on the football players on the pitch playing.
And the first opens with a ball sack. Let's be honest.
Open on some shorts too.
Yeah, that's George's short shorts later on.
Wait, can we say ball sack?
I
didn't say it was dirty.
No, he was saying the last name Balzac.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I wanted to.
I was not that. For the record. I was not.
But yeah, like the clarify this episode. For the character that it like focuses on to open the episode on is Rebecca, because it, I don't think this is like a spoiler, but like each season it kind of shows you like the character that's going to kind of like focus on that person's arc like over that season. And just because we have all three watched this at least once through before, we kind of know that like she's going to have this journey at least through this season. And that's why it's focusing on her here in this episode too. And that's like one of the things like that I liked in here a lot too, was that I think you'd already said it there, Mike, like the, like a lot of the stuff, she has like a lot of the good lines in this episode too, which like after we get through like talk about like the plot of the episode, we can kind of I guess go through like our like character highlight stuff and quotes and whatnot that we liked of it. But I liked also, we'll eventually see this painting again, that she gives away or doesn't give away. She gives to an auction.
She tries to give away.
Yeah, she tries to give to Higgins. She's like, oh yeah, he should have said yes. But, yeah.
Which,
go ahead.
I was going to move it forward. So go ahead and finish your talk.
Well, that's what I was going to say too. I was going to say, what would you like to talk about next, Mike?
Oh, I was going to say, you mentioned Higgins. He's just another character we meet for the first time. Very spineless, very yes-man-ish. And to me, his character in this, after you, in the very, like, I don't know if it's the last scene. I don't know, Ted's the last scene when he's talking to his wife. But the last scene we see of Higgins is the exposition of what he did to Rebecca, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And how she's giving him lots of money to be a, essentially, almost like a whipping boy. I don't think that's the correct term, but that's what comes to mind. And he's using this as almost like, I can't forget the Catholic word. Recompense comes to word, but that's not the right word.
Oh, penance?
When you go to confession. Yes, penance. There you go. Like, it's his cat of nine tails whipping himself, essentially, for what he's done in the past. Sticking with a religious motif.
Mm-hmm.
He's torturing himself when he could easily just walk away. But he's staying there to help her destroy the team, essentially, in this episode. Yeah. Does he stay that way? Only time will find out.
Yeah. Right. And he has high stakes in it. She said, like, this would be so great for you and your family. If he didn't have a family, he might not be as inclined to do that, right. But it's a power dynamic and an imbalance. And she knows, well, you know, you help this, and gives him a guilt trip, which is also very Catholic. you know, gives him a guilt trip and is like, well, you helped my ex, and makes it worthwhile. And I put, my note says, he's being the moral compass with the promotion, and she's kind of blackmailing him. And I think that's the moment where we go, oh, okay, I don't like you right now, and I don't agree with this.
Right.
With her.
That was the most villainous thing.
Yes.
She did.
She just didn't do an evil laugh. Like a cackle. That's the only thing it was missing.
Yeah. And like you guys are saying with Higgins in this too, is that like part of us like feels bad for him, but then there's like all this off screen prior to the pilot stuff that's happened to Rebecca because of like the lack of knowledge from Higgins or from the current manager, George. Like that was like, she just like feels, you know, rightfully so like pretty like pissed off about that. Like, that,
right.
Like no one, like, because like as she's firing George, the manager there, he like makes the whole joke about like, what's worse, having your like your husband like go around on you, or
being the last,
or yeah, being the last one to find out. Yeah, so yeah, that's, and you can kind of see like that's mostly like her motivation. Like we'll see more of it, I guess, but like you can see that's like where she's kind of like coming from with this too. So like she's not like totally just, you know. That's why it's good writing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's just the
it's not black and
basically,
white.
Basically, yeah, narrow it down to it's good writing.
Yeah. But, I mean, look, real talk. I'm also a stacked little one, well, little. I'm like her mini me. I'm a stacked blonde who's gone through a divorce. I get it. I'm sympathetic to her plight. And that was it hit me harder now than it did before. But yeah, it's not black and white, 100%, like you said.
Yeah. And then, Mike, that's what we're getting.
She could have gone so much more chaotic with her choices to ruin the football club. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest.
Yeah. And then that's like where we get our first kind of like cut, like, you know, like hard cut to like, she's like, oh no, I have a good idea for who I'd like to hire next.
Ooh, I just had a thought.
Who's that, Mark?
Ted Theodore Logan. No, not Ted Theodore Logan.
Ted Theodore Logan.
I think Bill that every time, though. And I'm Bill S. Preston, Esquire.
I think I only said that because, like, in the freaking thing on there, like, where they introduce him on the Sports Center thing, because they say Ted Theodore
Lasso.
Yeah, Lasso.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's just a few letters different.
A few letters and a band, and a missing band. They just need Wild Stallions for this, really.
In 30 years.
Yeah, so, like, what do you guys think about like that whole like Sports Center like scene there, like where we get like that, and like this is where we get like that, you know, like the Ted dancing, doing his, more anyone who had watched SNL like Jason Sudeikis, this, what's up with that dance, really? What do you guys think about like this whole, like our intro, like in the show, like our intro to Ted before like we meet him and beer on the plane?
To me, it was the American side of it for sure. So I was just like, oh, like it fit, like they're announcing it, but this was the American side of it, because I truly believe if there was the English broadcast of SportsCenter, it would have been a very different tone on the coach hiring, despite them wanting to be positive or whatever on the show. But it was a good intro. The lines that Scott Van Pelt say are kind of cheesy. I just don't know. I don't think they really cared what he said, because it was more about showing that clip of him dancing.
Oh, yeah.
But it was just a way to introduce it in a sports world fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And it fit.
There's a nice little thing there too. It's like very, like they move over really quick, but like with like them talking about how like Ted basically like was more or less like an like no one, and then like came on to that team, a team that like hadn't like won anything for forever, and led them to a championship. And now we're like, oh, foreshadowing. I mean, spoiler alert, I guess they don't quite get all the way to the championship, just because, you know, like points and whatnot. But I thought that was cool.
The relegation.
Yeah, but I do think that I liked how like that very like little thing that's at least in this pilot just kind of yes and then
the only like, thing I will say is I believe Wichita State is Division One, so that's really the only error.
I have no idea.
Yeah, totally agree with you, Mike. I knew that too.
That's the only thing I think they are.
I'm going to believe you. You said it with conviction, so I'm going to yes and you and say yes.
And moving on. So we meet Higgins. We've met Rebecca now. I believe we cut to Ted on the plane.
Yeah.
Is the next scene.
Well, yeah.
Where he takes the Ussie with the...
With the Ussie guy.
The Ussie.
With the Ussie guy, which is...
All three of us.
We are taking one right now.
Yeah. Oh.
Technically.
See?
Technically.
Guy, which he comes back periodically, and that's all he does is take these Ussies, which is a selfie containing someone else, in case you were wondering.
It's a great running gag. I love that. It's like, oh, that's fun.
Yeah, how many?
But this is the first instance, like, this is the English report I expected from the Sports Center. Like, you're fucking mental. Like, just, you know, like, what are you doing? Then he walks away, and we meet Beard. It's in the same scene.
Yeah.
To me, this these two characters changed the least throughout the series. Beard changes more because he decides he's happier over there in the end. But you get to see the dynamic here.
Yeah.
Beard's nose buried in a book, trying to learn this sport that they'd have no idea about. Whereas Ted's just mind wandering, flapping his gums, talking to people.
Mm.
You see their dynamic right away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you see the inverting the pyramid book there too. That's like becomes like a whole thing for Beard and Ted. Just like, you know, triangles in general will definitely become a thing for both of them. So mm-hmm. I think it's cool that like that's already like a book that like Beard's reading right there on the airplane and the like coaching soccer for dummies. Thought that was funny too.
Their chemistry is great. The immediate chemistry. I saw it as like, to me, the just that introduction with the two of them, you go, okay, this one is the one who leads with his brain, and this one's the one who leads with his heart, and that's why they work so well together. Based on that information.
My description was Ted knows people, Beard knows data. That's how I described them.
Pretty much, yeah. The brain and the heart. And then, yeah, because and then what I also thought here too is like Ted definitely ate Beard's cookie on the airplane.
Oh yeah.
Well, we're not going to talk about that.
He's like, that's not part of the
story. That's not part of the story.
Yeah, like he doesn't sleep at all in the airplane too. So there's like that whole thing there.
Even though I don't know how much like his hair's all messed up. That's like I didn't know if I believe that based on that little fact, littleness. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't have good hair when I leave an airplane for an extended period of time, so.
But yeah, I didn't. The more you go on in this, he might not have slept for other reasons. We will get to that.
Ah.
However, I believe the next one we meet Nate. They're on the pitch and they're touching the grass, feels different but the same, and Nate comes kind of I forget what the shot's called where they have the long someone's far away and then they like
come
the
camera a racked focus.
No, it's not a racked focus. It's I forget the name of it. It's not important, but Nate comes from across the pitch screaming, get off the grass, go, like, what are you doing? Are you crazy? Like, he doesn't know who Ted is. And that's our introduction to Nate.
Mm.
this,
which is interesting too.
Nervous guy, like
I was gonna say, it's interesting too to like see Nate like that, because you can see, like, I don't know how much I want to like interlay stuff that we know from the future, but like just like how he's acting like a certain way because he doesn't know who they are, so he's treating them a certain way because he doesn't know like the status of like who they're like meant to be. So it kind of shows also like how Nate is right now too.
You get that with this. You don't have to know the future of Nate to understand what you're saying, because he's bossy, he's screaming, he's yelling at them, and then when he finds out, oh, he's my boss, he's groveling and apologizing and you can do what you want, I'll go get more grass out of the dumpster, like, don't be mad at me.
Yeah,
he's just a little baby. That sense here. I put Nate is a baby, and then no one ever asks my name, and I put the little like emoji next to that in my notes. It just breaks your heart. Like, people being nice. Imagine that. Nice to somebody below them. And I hate using that term, but that's exactly what that is. They didn't have to be nice to him, and they were.
Yeah. There's like you know, yeah, like above the line, below the line kind of dynamic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Like, yeah, like what you're saying there, too, and just the small thing of someone rude. Like, later on, like, when they're on the pitch for, like, the training later, like, yeah, like you said, with Ted remembering his name, I thought that was kind of...
Nobody ever remembers my name.
Yeah. And he's like, he, like, hadn't given his name yet, and he's like, oh, whenever you're ready. Oh, he's like, oh, Nate. So, you can see, like, how Ted, like, already is not, like, infatuated isn't the right word, but kind of just... I guess charmed by Nate with like the way that he is in here too, so you can kind of see it at the beginning of like that friendship here, which is cool. So I enjoyed seeing like that whole dynamic between the two of them there again in this too. But like I know like the next thing here too is that we see like after that too, like they find like Nate brings them up to Rebecca.
So yeah, we get the first meeting of Rebecca, Ted, and Higgins, and Beard, and Nate, who jumps out of his skin when he sees Rebecca.
Yeah, like, I like there's that shot, like, he doesn't, like, introduce them, he just kind of, like, runs up, he's, like, kind of says, like, two words, and then runs back, goes on, and comes back up for a second, and then, like, turns around, and then runs away again.
Mm-hmm. Like, we gotta assume, knowing what we know now, I have no problem playing that card. So you may have to get mad at me for that one, Mark. Knowing who Nate worked for prior, I'm sure it was highly frowned upon for him to be in that room.
Mm.
But that changes again in the next season.
Sure. What did you guys?
So here we are. Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, what did you guys think of the dynamic of like Rebecca and Ted meeting each other here in this?
It was definitely a first day of the job, best foot forward type situation. It seems to be how it goes. Like, she doesn't want to scare him away. She wants him to feel comfortable, despite what she makes him do right after that.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was funny that she sends Beard off with Higgins and he has to get wet wipes and a humidifier.
Oh, yeah.
On top of, and the Wi-Fi password were on Ted's key items list.
Yeah. I don't like hot tea, cold tea, any tea, other than the letter T.
What about Mr. T?
And Mr. T is still cool too. But yeah.
You know what tea you really wouldn't like is throat coat tea. I have boxes of that. Uh-huh. You know what's really gross? No offense to people that make throat coat. Love it. What I don't love is when you're in the middle of a session and the tea bag opens and the flowers go everywhere and then you're like choking on chamomile, which I almost said chamomile because that's how one of my friends says it. I had to stop myself. Yeah, that's really gross. 10 out of 10, do not recommend. You're in the middle of a session. You're like, hang on. It's gross. Not fun. That is the worst tea when you taste all of it. But throat coat tea is good.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't like it though.
I've heard about the throat coat, mm-hmm. and I was going to ask you about that if you've ever used it.
Mm-hmm.
So glad it came up.
Always, always have at least a box, and then when I run out, I go ah. Then I order more. Pretty much how that goes. That's my cup of tea.
The other thing I liked, like in this kind of like grouping of like scenes here too with Rebecca and Ted too, is that like he seems to be like the only one that asks her. How she's doing because of her, and so that kind of takes her back a little bit too.
Yeah,
which I thought was cool. So you can kind of see like she like he's already kind of chipping away a very tiny bit like at her plan.
Yeah, I wrote
Ted's
that down
role
too.
Throughout the series is a diffuser. He is a diffuser. That's his primary role. I feel. Because he diffuses every situation, every person he's with.
He's a human tea diffuser.
There you go.
Amazing. I specifically noted that, too. I said, brief moment of vulnerability with her saying it hasn't been the easiest year when he asked her about her divorce. Because everybody else is like, oh, that must have sucked for you with this. And trying to really be mean about it. But he's the only person to say, like, I heard about that. How are you? Because he's so refreshingly vulnerable and himself with people, I think she probably wasn't expecting that, but she was in turn vulnerable with him. And I thought that was a beautiful, small exchange, because when you're going through something like that, that can make all the difference. I thought that was a really nice moment. Even though it was very small, I thought it was nice.
Yeah, I like it.
Concur.
Ooh, big words tonight.
Yeah, we're going all out.
We're smart.
Gotta
kids.
Use that Oxford Dictionary.
And the commas.
The Webster.
Oxford also in English.
But after that, was this exchange before or after she throws him into the press conference? Either way.
Before.
Like, literally just right before.
Right. So yeah, she immediately repays him by throwing him to the wolves, essentially.
Yeah.
As you do. So we meet Trent Crim for the first time.
In this, we meet Trent Crim, a character who I'm on the fence about. So we wouldn't. I have two characters I'm on the fence about.
Oh, yeah, I know what the other one is from that from another one of these we did.
That's right.
Months ago, with Coach Beard's Book Club. Bonnie will find out shortly.
Okay, keep me in suspense. Can't wait.
You're going to have to cover your eyes. All I'll say is you're going to have to cover your eyes as you enter a men's locker room.
Okay.
Well, she might do that anyway. I cover my eyes when I walk into a men's locker room, too.
I mean, me too.
Speak for yourselves.
You've obviously never been into a men's locker room.
Yeah, that's what you think.
She's not going to say it on the internet.
Listen, I've been into a men's dressing room doing a lot of theater. I've seen things can't even imagine.
That's different than the locker room, I feel.
Mm. Oh,
yeah, I've been in an NFL locker room. Yeah.
I don't know. We might have to have a face-off with that.
I've seen
next
things.
Time, you'll be in the locker rooms before me. Next time you're in there, FaceTime, record it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
We'll do a comparison.
Yeah, and get kicked out immediately. Yeah, yeah. Get put on a list. That's a great idea. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Anyway.
But this seems interesting, carrying on. Just because, what do you expect? Ted knows nothing about soccer. The media plays into that. They call him out on all this stuff. We get to meet the hooligans for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Avid fans at Mays there. But what's interesting is they introduce that panic attack. This is the first instance we see that happen.
Mm-hmm. And the sound effect that they do with it.
Mm-hmm. That puts you in it.
Sound effect.
If you've never had one, that's pretty damn close.
It leads me to think that Jason Sudeikis either really has had them or like someone like within the writing staff or like that like group, like the higher group of creative on the show has had them to like know like how to like layer that like, into the making of it.
In some sense, he's had one just by the fact that he's done stand-up comedy or improv, stage comedy. Because I, the second show I ever did, I started talking and then just set the mic down and stood there and said sorry and then just ran off stage. So the nerves get to you in those situations. It wasn't a full-blown panic attack, but I'm sure he's had something close.
Or whoever did, they, I think they handled that really nicely. And I appreciate shows that can talk about things like mental health when our parents' generation, at least mine, you didn't talk about that sort of thing. You're fine. Go walk it off. Go outside. You got nothing to cry about. That sort of thing. And really, people our age are the ones talking about it and going, no, it's okay. We can talk about going to therapy. But that's
not how boys behave. That's what I was
talking about. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then you have, you know, people like Carrie Fisher who began talking about that and being more open about it and making it okay to talk about. And I can really appreciate, I've only ever had 2 panic attacks. And that really felt, that felt like it. And it had a really interesting creative way and artistic way of putting you in the middle of that and making you feel like, oh, okay. Even if you've never had one, you can recognize it and go, oh, this is either anxiety or a panic attack or something. And it had such a good way of pulling you into it. And I thought that was really well done and nicely handled. It didn't make fun of it in any way. And I appreciate that. And I like that this show talks about those sort of things. Spoiler alert. But they are not shy about talking about that, and I think that's important.
Yeah,
agreed.
And really quick to go back to like what Mike said, like when he was in the airplane.
What I said?
I was just gonna say like part of like what he said like on the airplane.
I say lots of stuff.
And like why we think Ted maybe didn't like fall asleep was because they have that shot really quick, right? Again, setting up this like this other storyline of like him already kind of being homesick because he looks at his phone and sees his wife and his son on the lock screen there. So he like already,
but you don't know why he's homesick about that. You have an assumption.
Yeah. I mean, because like even right here, just like for the simple thing of him just like missing those two people, you doesn't even have to have any other connotation to it. Just that being there could just be, you know, like he's already like why he was asking Beard, he's like, is this nuts? He's like, yeah, this is nuts. So like that whole that whole thing there too. So I like that like layering of stuff into this because of that.
It's like an onion.
And parfait.
And parfait.
And trifles.
Everybody like
trifles. Hey, nobody ever said. Anyway, so this scene also gives Rebecca a moment of characterization, because Ted's freaking out and she senses it and she just kind of calls an end to it and stands in front of everyone being like, yeah, this is nuts, but when's the last time you guys are even here? This room's usually empty. Yeah. Like, I'm creating buzz about this team, positive or negative. You're talking about my team now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The profound mediocrity. I mean, get this little bit of foreshadowing with Trent also being there too, with where Rebecca calls it the new way, the lasso way.
Mm-hmm. I put Trent here at the exposition, and something I wrote, but now I kind of want to backtrack on it. Rebecca coming in to save the day, I see it as more of she created the problem and then comes in to say, oh, no, I can fix this. I'm like, ooh, that's manipulative. She learned something from Roops, didn't she? But then I also put Rebecca coming in to save the day and be mother. And then I put, am I wrong? The second time? Oh, girl. Those were my notes for that. Ooh, my camera got blurry. See? She blurred it up for me. But, yeah, I kind of had, when we were talking about it, she really, knowing full well, let's just say that she's throwing him to the wolves and then coming in to fix the problem is very manipulative in that sense of like, oh, I'm safe, you're safe with me, and it's building that trust. It's not nice, but we can see where she probably got it from. I'm going to turn my camera off and turn it back on. And just ignore me.
Try doing the hand.
Yeah, thing. I don't know why it keeps doing that. It's okay. You just talk. I'm going to do this. It's fine. I'll have a moment with people watching. It's cool.
We'll give Bonnie a moment.
No, it's okay.
But yeah, we get this. We get the sense that Trent's going to be around. He's going to be the main one because he's the only one who stands up and talks. We don't know much about Trent other than he's a reporter with glorious hair.
That's true.
Because all the other reporters stay the same as well, but we don't know any of their names. At least I don't.
Yeah. And then eventually some of them will get nicknames from somebody else. Yeah. Yeah.
Then from here, we finally get to go. I think we get glimpses of the players during this press conference. I think we see Roy.
Oh, yeah. And Sam.
And then the French guy who Roy basically is like, nobody understands you.
Oh, yeah. Richard Lamontagne.
The French guy. Yeah. Mike said what he said. Oh, that part made me laugh.
I put this in my notes too, but like with Sam, when he talks here too, I was like, also because Tahib Jamaa in this episode is listed as a guest star too, which is interesting. It's like, as far as like some other players, as at least casting wise. I never understood
the booking titles, so maybe one of you guys can explain them to me better. What star, guest star, with, featuring, what's the difference?
Whatever your agent negotiates for you.
The only rule I know of that for credits is like for writing credits with like the ampersand and then the word written out and, or it's so like the ampersand is like a writing team and then the word and written out is like this person then also came in and wrote.
This person came in and said change this and I get a credit.
Yeah. Well, so that's why it's funny on the like side tangent, very quick side tangent, is on the Marvel movie Eternals that the director Chloe Zhivago, and she wrote the initial pass of the screenplay with a partner and then also wrote another pass of it by herself. So the writing credit on that movie is written by her ampersand and then her name again because of how the whole like weird WGA rules for like crediting writing, even though she's already technically credited, she has to be credited again because it's a different draft but by herself. But yeah, I don't know like the whole like as far as like SAG rules, although like Benny said it's probably something manager related.
I always figured it was about pay level and like no more notoriety comes with different words.
Mm-hmm.
Listed, yeah,
basically. But, screen time, all that.
All that to be said was that Sam's accent in this episode seems much thicker than like later on, like when he becomes like a more like featured character in the show, which I thought was interesting. But I mean, that's like usually like how pilots to shows are kind of anyways. Like you see like he doesn't talk that much, but like just that little bit, I was like, oh, that. Just because I got so used to like what Sam ends up sounding like through like season 2 and 3, mm-hmm. that just that little bit right here, I was like, oh, geez, all right. Which is more like what his dad sounds like when Ola comes like to way ahead in the future.
Well, he's more assimilated by that point.
Yeah,
he's
that's true.
Been around it more.
But yeah, that was like the one like tiny thing I noticed there too. And then like yeah, like you're saying, like we meet Roy here, and like it's like. Like this level tier of Roy before like any kind of character development.
He doesn't give one F about nothing. He's just, I'm the old man. I don't care what anyone thinks anymore. Like he probably was like that in his playing time too. But
yeah.
Either way, we then go out and meet the players a little more. It's Ted goes out to watch training, not practice.
Yeah.
Training. So we see, which is funny to me in this scene, because he's going around, he's like, that's Roy Kent, that's Jamie Tartt, and then he goes, that's Sam. They just kind of like glance off Sam real fast. Like they have no other facts other than he's from Nigeria about Sam.
Oh, yeah.
that playing it, I see.
That'll be when we get to our quotes. I have, like, one of my quotes comes from there too, which I thought was really funny. I like the scene a lot though too, because it's a good way for us to meet, like, all of the players that eventually become, you know, like, bigger characters, like, on the show.
You meet all the players.
But yeah, like, we meet Jamie, like you said, we meet Roy,
figuratively,
we meet all Sam, the Danny hasn't shown up yet, so Danny's not there. Yeah, and then
you hear the goalie's name, but it's not the same.
Oh yeah, it's Zorro's not there yet, I don't think. Isaac, it's interesting.
Isaac's there, but you don't hear his name.
Yeah, like, it's interesting to see, it was just kind of really funny to try to just, like, track, like, some of, like, the team cast that, like, we'll get, like, more with. And then there's, like, this whole bunch of other cast, like, that's in this pilot episode that, like, I don't think we ever see again once they, like, really narrow down, like, who they want as, mm-hmm. like, who's gonna be.
They're there, they're just over here.
Yeah, it's like like, I mean, Richard's there, like I said, or sorry, Richard Lamater, like the
French guy.
Yeah. but we don't, like, Bumbercatcher, we don't see Bumbercatcher, or a bunch of, like, the other dudes here yet. So I just thought that was cool, like, this introduction that we get to everybody here. And you kind of, like, see that team dynamic between, like, you know, like, Jamie, like, showing off, and, like, Roy
refusing help, being just, like, the loner.
Yeah.
Too good for everybody.
Yeah. But what else did you guys think about, like, that scene?
It was the praise handed down to Nate was a good moment in building Nate up into, from a Ted perspective. Like, the way he was coaching Nate more than anybody else in this opening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Curious of what that sports drink actually was, because it was a very weird color.
Yeah, it just looked like, Red Bull's like a different
color. Like flat beer.
Yeah. Thought it looked like orange Gatorade.
Yeah, maybe
it was. It wasn't bright enough. Well, it's different. It's overseas, too. They don't.
Oh, yeah, it could be like
antifreeze and things like we do here in the States.
Yeah, there's always this, like, orange, like, energy drink. Yeah, like the, well,
from McDonald's.
Well, no, there's this, like, orange energy drink, like, whenever there's, like, some YouTube series that's, like, has actors or whatnot from, like, different countries, like, going through, like, their favorite, like, snacks and foods from, like, their home country, and usually the actors that are from, like, the UK, like, in Scotland or the part of Ireland that's in the UK or England or, like, Wales, there's usually, like, this orange, like, energy drink that most of them bring up, that maybe that's it. But I think it's supposed to be implied that, like,
I can't pronounce the word that I'm seeing on Amazon is listed as number one in England. Yeah. Lucozade?
Nope. I think it's like something that begins with, like, a B or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, I think it's like
Lucozade and Isostar.
I think it's, like, supposed to be implied that Nate made the energy drink too, so, like,
well, yeah, it's, you get, like the powdered Gatorade and stuff.
Yeah, so, like, outside of that too, like, besides, like, this, like, we get, like, this whole other stuff with, like, Ted learning more stuff about soccer here too, and, like, what else did you have to say, like, about, like,
the same? Well, it's funny because the dynamic between Beard and Ted is also on display, where Beard says nothing, he just nods. And Ted's like, ooh, that's high praise, you don't even know.
mm-hmm. Oh,
that's just a quick little scene to get.
Oh, yeah, that's when they go.
Show how Ted's in his element, but out of his element at the same time.
Yeah. That's when they go into the locker room after that. And this is where Mike's second favorite character comes in.
Well, this is where we go to the locker room and we finally meet Keely Jones. I have no problems with her character. I have no problems with Juno Temple. I believe she does a fantastic job as Keeley Jones. But what value does Keeley Jones bring to the main story here? Why do we meet her here? Other than to be like, she's going to be here. I don't know. Like I said, I have no problems with her character. I have no problems with her portrayal. I just don't see how she fits in the story. Other than to be... She's not even like the moral compass. I can't think of a word. Like, she takes on everyone's grief, essentially. And she's just like, she doesn't get anything from anybody, character development-wise. Until, outside of Rebecca. She's like, those two together, maybe. That's a good point to have her, but...
Well, it can be hard to see it in the first episode, but...
I felt this way all through season three.
I think, to me, you have the duo with Ted and Coach Beard, right? And then you have Rebecca and Keeley, and I think it's supposed to be kind of mirroring that dynamic and showing female friendships on TV, which we don't always see a lot of.
True. Or they're completely different and no one likes them. Yeah. Usually the female friendships are portrayed as the women are catty to each other, mm-hmm. but they're friends at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not... It's just the stereotype that's portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
But, I just struggle from a writing perspective. From a writer perspective, and having had to cut characters out of things, I feel like Keeley is one I would have been told to cut so many times.
Hmm.
And that's just where I'm coming from.
That's fair. Not that you needed that validation from the woman here to tell you that's fair, but that's fair.
Although, who told you to cut her out? Was it?
I don't recall. I don't recall. I've paid for feedback. I've entered competitions. I've done all this stuff. And it's usually someone who reads it being like, this character was pointless. Why are they here? And like, I had such a strong connection to this character. That's why they're there. Like, and that's why Keeley's here. Like, yeah. Someone had a very strong connection and it works for them in the writer's room. Kudos. But for me, in my head, I'm like, I would have cut this character in my head.
When we get to season three, let's circle back to this to discuss that. Because I have an idea, but I don't want
to do it. I'm going to refer you to when we talked to Coach Beard Book Club after the end of season two, and I said the same thing.
I don't want to do spoilers, so I want to come back to it when we get to season
you're good.
Three.
We will come back. We will go full circle.
Let's circle back on that in a couple months.
Or a year. It might be.
Yeah, whatever. We're not mathing here. We said that at the beginning. Speaking of full circle.
Yeah. But speaking of Keeley, I guess eventually, Keeley and this person, Roy, like Ted invites Roy into the office there. I also like quick side there too. I like this like quick, tiny little thing too, where they have like Beard and Ted. Sit down at the desks that are on opposite sides of the office.
And they push them together.
Push them together and like that. So you
before you cut on to Roy, though, I'm going to interrupt.
Okay.
Because we didn't talk about the other part of the scene, the characterization of Jamie Tart, handsome Squidward.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't have to say a word, and you already knew who he was based on his hat,
yeah,
his tracksuit, and just his way he carried himself.
Douche. Yeah. That's what I wrote in my notes. Man, he's a douche.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the other thing I ended up, like, now when I watched this the first time, like, I didn't know, like, where some of the stuff was going to go. But, like having, like, watched the entire series now, too, like, that's one of the other things like, I really appreciate about the show is that, like, the show, it does it to you, like, in, like, a twofold way where it, like, it makes you, like, it plays this like good game of like giving you preconceived notions about like all of these characters and like how you should think of them like as they are like I don't know like within this episode but then like through the seasons and the stories like you see like the really great character like peppered in like even in this first season, we'll see stuff eventually, but like I just like how like there's a reason why everyone is the way they are. It's not just like it, like we've been saying, it's not like a simple
everyone's black, I guess,
white thing. It's quote, everyone's unique. Shades of gray. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And everyone's got room to grow.
Yeah.
I just like how with Jamie specifically, and there's others I can't remember off the top of my head, you get it without anything. You get it instantly.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't waste any time furthering his character in this episode.
Yeah. Can we go back to Roy now?
You can go back now.
Oh, I was going to say, I was just with like that whole thing there with
unless Roy. I do this.
The whole thing there with Roy and Beard and Ted was, I enjoyed that too. Like, you know, Roy says, I didn't know I'd end my career being coached by Ronald F. and McDonald's there. And then
can't believe he said that about you.
He's like, you know, if you're going to do anything, we're going to have to win him over. He's like, if he's mad now, how do you think he's going to be when we win him over?
He'll so
be furious. Which, spoiler alert, Roy will be upset that he's been won
Roy
over.
Roy is generally furious all the time.
But yeah, I enjoyed that like whole thing there with them back and forth in this part too. And then like while we're still in here too, like Keeley like comes back in like while Ted's hanging the belief sign up. So we get the belief sign for the first time. So
belief sign is there.
Which has become merch and is on quite literally almost every single thing for the show. Yeah.
Hey.
Oh yeah, I got mine too.
Yeah, well yours is permanent, Mark.
Well, I was gonna say I have the
Mister, it's become merch.
Hey.
Like, don't you have like three of them?
I just hit my microphone with this rock.
When our Alice Ted Lasso rocks combine.
I have to thank her because this rock is actually quite cool just by itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she does a good job with picking out like this rock is really cool. Shout out to Alice Lynn who runs the Ted Lasso Rocks account, who is an awesome person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You might say they rock.
Yeah. Follow her account. And
oh, that's in the Holdo one. I don't have the...
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, noise. Follow her account and you might just win one of the rocks, too.
You might learn something.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, the belief sign.
Little moment of flex. It's fine. Show off.
Quite literally. But yeah, I like that whole this whole scene there too, because in here, like Ted was also putting tape to make the picture of Keeley more modest with Jamie's thing. And at first I think she just thinks that like Ted's like leering like into like the locker or like just like looking at the picture. And then she ends up seeing that like he was just, you know, covering up, which again foreshadowing for someone else will seem much later on in the show. But I just like those like kind of little like character things like that shows will do sometimes too, and you're like showing who the person is without having to say
show don't tell.
The show don't tell.
Yeah, I thought that was a sweet moment. I just put oops boobies, Ted covered her up. That's my note verbatim in my notes app.
Nice. And again, another characterization for Jamie Tart. No words, shows you who he is with what he has in his locker compared to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then
the belief sign.
Yeah, I like that she sees that it's hanging like one way askew, and then she's like a little more, and then it's just askew a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's like this is like one of like the iconic scenes because of that, because it's just going up for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And many more scenes will take place around that sign.
I like that it's not perfectly straight.
Yeah,
it's like it's imperfect and that's okay. Like it's nice. It's like this isn't straight and narrow. I thought that was an interesting choice. I was like, oh, okay. The symbolism, if you will.
Which Now I think we have to add a soundboard sound of Coach Beard just saying metaphor to this the podcast sound.
Oh yeah.
But yeah.
We can add plenty.
But
moving on. We saw the Believe sign, and then Ted and Keeley have their moment, and then after that is when they're leaving, right?
Mm-hmm.
They show everyone leaving.
Nate in the car and the honking, and Rebecca's
forgetting getting Ted a car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Evil minus the cackle. Yeah.
Also, a little bit more foreshadowing there too, with like them thinking that Nate had the super nice sports car. He's like, oh no, I couldn't handle that. And he's like, this is me right here. Yeah, like you were saying earlier, Mike, with the little Mini Cooper Gremlin type car there, and he's like, look, I'm driving imaginary steering wheel.
That's my boy Nate.
That's like,
that was the closest they came to that original NBC Sports Lasso.
That's like the most American Ted in this whole like American tourist kind of Ted.
Yeah.
And yeah, like you're like in this entire episode here is like him and like burr, burr, burr.
Yeah. But the key point of this scene is when Ted leaves and we have that Higgins Rebecca moment. That's what this scene, like, that's the meat and potatoes of this scene.
Yeah.
First, she's all nice and I love you, Ted. Secondly, like, as he's leaving, not literally, shouldn't say that, but she puts on the facade like that he's great, and then he leaves and like, I can't wait for this man to ruin this team, basically. This guy's an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect. It's working. And we get the revelation of what Higgins did. I don't know if you want to call it indirectly to her, but directly to her, with her and Rupert there.
He helped, I see it as he helped Rupert ruin their marriage from the inside out, so she's going to ruin his team from the inside out.
Yeah. Yeah, like, basically,
he can tell it's killing him from the inside out.
Saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
Literally killing Higgins from the inside out.
Mm-hmm. And he's just so sweet. Don't do that to him. I just want to hug him. Hug him, Higgins. Yep.
Then we, like, I think, like, the next thing after this is that we cut to Ted's.
Ted in his apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Apartment.
Showering.
Oh, yeah.
Like music changes.
The depression shower.
The depression shower. The loneliness.
Which
be alone with his thoughts.
I'm pretty sure they reused this shot of him in the shower, like in the last season. I think it's straight up the same shot.
Why not? They own it. Why not?
Yeah, but and then he's wearing this shirt, the Jorather.
Mm-hmm.
For those just listening, apologize.
It's a Jorather Kansas City Gatestack shirt, the one that Ted is wearing. Basically, essentially, like as a sleep shirt, I guess, in the show.
Comfort. It's his comfort shirt.
It's his jammies.
Yeah, it's his PJs. His
pajamas.
Yeah. But, yeah, and then you can see that.
Yeah, we get the phone call.
There's
two phone calls?
Mm-hmm. Kid and wife.
I thought that was the same phone call.
I thought he made two
different conversations.
Oh, I thought he made two different phone calls. Either way, there were two conversations that were had.
Two conversations.
There was a phone. There were conversations. The rest doesn't matter.
They used it like a phone. They didn't just text on it. It was all.
It wasn't a banana.
Old school.
Done for comedy.
Oh, I hate it. Got that beaten out of me in theater school. We were told never do this in theater school. Had it beaten out of me. It's great. Banana phone for people listening.
Nice.
But essentially, Ted calls to talk to his son because obviously he misses his family. Sweet moment. Oh, kid doesn't have time for dad. Typical. Kids don't understand until it's not at first. They get it. Dad's gone. It's sad. But my friends are still here. Like, I'm having fun.
Yeah.
They don't understand the impact. Then we get the awkward conversation. The one we didn't expect to see based on what we were seeing so far. Here, not see. You don't see a conversation.
Yeah.
Maybe Daredevil does, but I don't. But basically, Ted took the job because to give his wife space while they're going through separation at the time. It's not a full-blown divorce at the time.
About like 2,000
bringing credence to his comments about how Rebecca's feeling earlier on, bringing more feelings up there, showing that like maybe Ted didn't sleep on the plane because of this.
Mm-hmm.
Just adding another layer, as Mark pointed out.
Like perfect.
To the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which, it's crazy to me, maybe because I've never been separated or gone through a divorce, that you choose to go so far away in a separation when you're trying to make it work. I can't speak from experience. Usually what I've seen is, okay, they're just at their parents' house or at a hotel in the same city, but to go 9 hours away, different country, just seems like it might have been the wrong choice. In my head, which I don't know.
Well, I'm obviously not going to air all of my dirty laundry, but
you'll have to do nothing.
No, just because, like, you know, I don't know who's going to listen, but if somebody asks for space, give them space, and
right.
But in doing that. In getting that distance, you see things more clearly. And I see it and maybe just from this specific moment in this episode, it can be hard to be away from your person when you're doing what you love, even if things aren't going well. I have been through that. So I'm definitely going to speak to this, but maybe he saw it as a chance to, even though he's not qualified, to do something great for himself and to prove he is enough. If I just do this, maybe then things will be okay. If I prove myself in this, maybe then she'll think I'm enough. She'll think I'm worthy. She'll think whatever. That is how I think we can view that interaction from that lens. Even though it's painful, it's like, well, it'll be okay in the end because we'll get space and we'll miss each other and then it'll be okay. Because that's how it's going to be fine. I'm optimistic. It'll be okay.
Yeah. And then, like, not to like put too much more like from what we'll find out later on, but just like what we end up finding out more like about Ted, we can kind of see like why he would reason it in that way too. Yeah, and it was probably a thing of timing too, where like that was happening with him already, and then he was offered this position, and it.
Well, yeah, I don't think this position spurred the separation.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, came after for sure.
Yeah,
it's just, and now what I know from football coaches in America, just from the stories you see and hear. They're married to the job. Like, their family comes second.
Mm-hmm.
So in my brain, I'm like, why would you then, you're having these problems. Why would you then go somewhere even further away, even harder to communicate, and expect it to be okay, I guess.
This is nuts.
This is nuts. And sometimes people self-sabotage. There's so many different ways we can look at it, is sometimes...
Which will be a common theme throughout this series.
Uh-huh. There's self-sabotage. There's, I'm not thinking clearly because I have X, Y, and Z. I have depression. I have anxiety. Not even matter thinking clearly, just making different decisions that somebody else might go, what are you thinking, you dummy? Like, you know, it's like, well, you put A and B and C together, and then that's why. Kind of have something like that.
Also brings Beard's friendship into question a little bit. Like, did he try to talk him out of it? Or is he just the guy who's like, I owe Ted everything, so I'm just going where Ted goes?
I think it's probably that one.
Yeah. I want to keep an eye on him.
Find out later.
Yeah.
I want to be there for him because he was there for me. And if shit goes south with this, I want to make sure he's not out there alone.
quotes. You guys want to talk about our favorite quotes from the episode?
Well, I think I already did mine, but yeah, you guys can.
I have two, and I mentioned hot brown water. That's just because tea is on the mind.
Oh, yeah.
But the first one comes from Rebecca, where she's talking to George, and she goes, "Well, something's hanging out." Oh, and there's the other one. Noel and Liam, but not necessarily an oasis.
I was proud of my son for understanding that oasis reference, too.
I'm proud, too. That's great.
Yeah,
and teaching him right.
I think that's partially because of Lost. Because a drive shaft is essentially supposed to be like an oasis thing. Like Charlie Pace's brother's name is even Liam in that. So you said you had more quotes, Mike?
The other one was when Rebecca's like, "Mrs. Welton's my father." Got me every time I hear it.
Oh yeah, I like Ted's follow up to that. It's like, "Oh, if that's a joke, I love it. If not, I cannot wait to unpack that with you."
That's a fun one.
Then there's a little quip when, because the driver hired to bring him there, they take him to see the bridge. Forget the name of the bridge that they see.
Oh, the Tower Bridge.
But it's not, yeah. But it's not London Bridge, because that one's not still standing.
He's like, "Oh, that one's still
standing." I think it's falling down.
It was supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's been falling down since I was 5, so I don't know if it actually...
London Bridge, also in Arizona. They're like the original London Bridge is here.
That one fell down, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So my favorite quotes from this, like the Ted, "How many countries are in this country?" Nate and Beard say 4 at the same time. And then Ted.
That was in NBC Sports, I believe.
Oh, yeah. But Ted has like this, like, very, like.
As well. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just commenting to get people to watch the previous episode.
He's got like he has like a very quiet, like, remark reply to that where he's like, "Oh, like America nowadays."
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't noticed that part of it before. Yeah. And then I always thought tea was going to taste like hot brown water. And you know what? I was right. With Rebecca, "Do you believe in ghost head?" "I do, but more importantly, I believe they need to believe in themselves." And then Higgins, some pronounce it Jith. And then the last two were, "That fellow looked like a kitty cat when he gets spooked by a cucumber." He's talking about Jimmy Tart. And then my last one ends up becoming like a classic Ted Lasso line, but smells like potential.
Mm-hmm. That's what I had for mine.
Nice.
That's a good way to close it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we got a little more.
Yeah.
Just a tiny bit.
We got to talk about some foreshadowing and Easter eggs.
Yeah.
More.
Yeah, like my foreshadowing stuff I had in there, the fizzy water, the Hockney painting. Rebecca gives Ted a tour of the stadium, and he asks her if she's okay from her divorce. But I guess that's like more just tying stuff in later. And then Rebecca Welton walks in and calms the press down, sitting, we kind of talked about this, that she calls the new way the Lasso way. And then I think, Mike, you covered, or you had the, although I guess this can kind of be in the soundtrack too.
Yeah, it's the foreshadowing I picked up on just having watched the season and all the series and all that. The first song you hear is called No Future.
Yeah, Sex Pistols song.
And I'm just like, "Oh, that's trying to say in my head, that's what we're going to expect. That's Ted has no future here." Whether it be what happens throughout the season series, or it's going to be like what happens at the NBC Sports thing. He's fired within 6 hours. There's no future.
Yeah.
The theme song, specifically, while it's upbeat and joyful, if you listen to the words, though, it's kind of not, and it's kind of foreshadowing, in my mind, Ted's place within this world he went to.
I bet, yeah, this might be all that you get.
It might be all that you get. Heaven knows you've tried. And then the key change at the end when they say, "Heaven knows," it's just like goes from upbeat to this.
Resigned.
Really? Yes.
Yeah.
Like a sigh.
Yeah.
Essentially. And then the panic attacks, I just mentioned that they start with those.
And so far, I was going to put this like every few episodes or like just kind of touch in at the end of the episodes. I know some of us are Ted Beckett people and some of us are not. By the end of this episode, Ted Beckett, no inkling of where to be seen at this point.
Well, Ted's still married, so yeah. He's not looking. Well, he's not.
And the only reason I'm including this because when I finally got Mike to watch Ted Lasso, the first message I ever got from him as a reaction to
it's true.
Ted Lasso was
Mark's gonna frame it and make a shirt out of it. I go, so Ted and Rebecca, when are these two gonna bang? That was the first thing.
Yeah, that was the first reaction I ever got from him from watching the show.
Brilliant.
So, I have some good ones. I'm a man of deep thought.
Yeah.
And if you're still listening, I'd love for you guys to count the amazingly large words we used in this episode. Give us a rundown. See if you remember them all. See if we remember them all. Because I don't.
Yeah.
Whistle!
Amazing.
That will do it for this episode where we talked about the pilot. Next week, we're going to talk about episode... Oh, not next week. I think in 2 weeks. We're going to talk about episode 2, Biscuits.
Biscuits.
Biscuits. Yeah, and then people can find us at richmondwaypod.com for all other episodes, this episode, everything.
All the things.
Yeah.
All of the things.
Except for like our home addresses, but everything else, you know, that'll be up there.
Mine might be there. I don't know. Oh. I don't know, Mark.
But all right, guys.
My neighbor is a cow, so good luck.
On that note.
On that note, moo.
Moo indeed.
Bye.
So until next time, folks, be curious, not judgmental, and keep rewatching. This is Ted Lasso signing off. As the man once said, the harder you work, the luckier you get.